Hey, it's Drex from This Week Health Cyber and Risk Community, and I want to invite you to our next webinar. It's going to focus on what else? Defending health data. I'll be chatting with experts from Rubrik and Microsoft. Register right now at thisweekhealth.com/rubrikwebinar. That's all one string, R-U-B-R-I-K webinar, thisweekhealth.com/rubrikwebinar. See you online soon.
Welcome to This Week Health. My name is Bill Russell. I'm a former CIO for a 16 hospital system and creator of This Week Health, where we are dedicated to transforming healthcare one connection at a time. Today, we have an interview in action from the 2024 conferences, the spring conferences, Vive in LA, HIMSS in Orlando. Special thanks to our sponsors, Quantum Health, Gordian, Dr. First, CDW, Gozio Health, Artisite, and Zscaler. You can check them out on our website, thisweekhealth.com. Now, on to our interview.
Hi, I'm Drex at Vive 2024, and I am here with my good friend, Teresa Meadows from Cook Children's Hospital. And you guys have a lot going on at Cook right now. You just opened a whole new hospital. What's going on? What's top of mind back home before you came here?
I mean, originally I'd have a lot of different answers. Like, top of mind right now is trying to help operations deal with the Change Healthcare.
Oh, yeah, issue. For sure.
But for us, probably a lot of evaluation about how to improve workflow and burnout. I mean, that's kind of been our number one focus. So we're looking at products that actually will solve problems.
Nursing
so,
burnout, clinician burnout,
everybody. So we've got two projects we're working on, one for physician and one for nursing, to really kind of reduce, actually get more nurses into the workforce, and then help our physicians want to practice medicine, which most don't these days. Yeah. So really trying to figure out how we bolster both, because if the mom is not happy, nobody's happy. So if the nurses aren't happy, doctors certainly aren't happy, and vice versa. And
I'm married to a nurse, so that's 100%.
And I'm a nurse,
and you're a nurse,
so I'm super cranky all the time. So if I'm not happy, nobody's happy. And so we've really focused on trying to find solutions, and we've kind of done a problem-based approach. Like, what are your key pain points, and we're trying to find solutions to kind of influence those pain points versus just looking at everything on
just
the market.
Just not a shotgun, but something that's really specific that there's consensus around.
So we did
around,
a burnout survey,
okay.
we surveyed everybody for burnout, and then we took that data, and now we're trying to find solutions to maybe help reduce it.
So here you are.
I know.
At the big show.
Yes.
Looking around at a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Maybe for burnout or for other things.
Yeah.
What are you seeing that is kind of interesting, might be something you take home?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's several really cool technologies. I think AI, I hate to even say it out
loud.
I know
it. It's okay.
Is really in its infancy. And so trying to find someone who has actually thought about a problem and not just, we're going
to
cure your documentation with AI.
Trying to AI everything.
Yeah, but really kind of maybe hyper-focused solution. So I was talking to, I forget the name of the company, but they have a solution where they help patients get to a doctor faster. So with all the access problems that we have, they have technology that will actually sit on your website and help you get you to an appointment in 2 clicks versus 37 clicks.
Yeah, wow.
That normally it takes for somebody to find something. So that's kind of cool.
Right.
But there's lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, there is lots of cool stuff.
You have to vet the coolness for the reality-ness.
I think there's always a balance in that, right? And
that's
part of your BS detector that's built into all CIO jobs.
You get super
jobs.
Excited about what you see, but then you're like,
let me think about the downside of that.
What could go wrong?
So speaking of not downside, but if you could have any fictional character as your life coach, who would that be and why?
It would totally be Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. I think that's a good answer. Why? You love that guy?
I love him. First of all, I like soccer. My daughter is a soccer player.
Yeah.
But secondly, his approach is kind of how I approach things.
Yeah.
Like, he's very people-oriented and relationship-oriented and figuring out how people tick.
I totally see that.
Figuring out how people tick. Like, I really enjoy that. And so to see, like, I know it's fiction, but to see how he kind of learned what made people tick.
Right.
And then making people like you. Like, I'm going to stay with you till you like me.
I love it.
That's what I would do. I'm like, you're going to like me.
So that cranky thing isn't really it.
It isn't. It's occasionally. I'm less cranky most of the time.
Hey, thanks for your time.
Hey,
really appreciate you coming over, doing the interview.
Fun.
I'll see you soon.
Yes, you will.
All right. Hi, I'm Drex at Vibe 2024, and we're with Toby at First Health Advisory. And man, there's a lot going on this week. I want to start by just thanks for being here. And tell me a little bit about your background, because you're kind of legendary in all of this.
Oh, well, I worked for First Health Advisory as chief security officer for our government health divisions. But before I joined First, I spent 5 years as the provost for the SANS Technology Institute.
Right.
So that's what led me here. First Health is a digital health risk assurance company, meaning that we do cybersecurity practices, we do privacy and resiliency initiatives. As healthcare moves into the digital age, security needs to move with it. We want to make sure that as we're adding new features and benefits to improve healthcare, that we always do them in a secure manner so we don't hurt healthcare in the process.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that, part of the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because a longtime healthcare CIO, but I got to this point where it became really clear to me the thing that's going to interrupt all the investments and all the things that we're doing that are benefiting patients and families seems like it's more likely than ever to be a cybersecurity incident.
Yes.
So I started focusing on that path because I think that's maybe we can do the most good.
My jump from the SANS Institute was exactly for that reason. While I was at SANS, we developed a product called Cyber City for the Air Force. It's a kind of attack and defend range where they can practice their tool sets, right? Both ways. You know, it has a train station in it, it has a school system, it has water pumping stations, missile silos, and a hospital. We put an electronic health record system in, was embarrassingly weak. It was like a piece of Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
So before we gave it to them, we had to harden it. And so I went and talked to my good friend, Carter Groom at First Health, and said, like, you need to get into the business of providing cybersecurity practices along with your information technology implementations.
Yeah.
He agreed if I agreed to join him. And so I know that healthcare was going to come under attack. And so that's why we're a healthcare only focused firm.
I mean, First Health Advisory has such an amazing and interesting history of how the company got here. You want to talk a little bit about that? From the doing initially electronic health record implementations and all of that, and then as those things went around, like, oh wait, here's a giant gap and a challenge. Cybersecurity.
Yeah, we're one of the major players when meaningful use came out to implement electronic health record systems, but really for us, the differentiator wasn't about to plug it in and go away.
Yeah.
It was really trying to understand what the customer's needs were and what their clinical workflows are, because we have clinicians on our team to represent the voices of that, so it's not just an IT project,
right?
Stuff like that. So the vast majority of success of those early days was putting in what we call at the elbow support, so the clinicians could really take advantage of the workflows of the new equipment that they had. And like I say, that's the connection to that cybersecurity practice when we found that the EHRs that were all being put in were terrible. As a matter of fact, I know there was a year-long delay in the implementation at Defense Health because Cerner could not be put in because they couldn't pass DoD security standards.
Right.
So it was a whole year delay before they got that even started.
In the ever-evolving world of health IT, staying updated isn't just an option, it's essential. Welcome to This Week Health, your daily dose of news, podcasts, and expert commentary designed specifically for healthcare professionals like yourself. Discover the future of health IT news with This Week Health. Our new news aggregation process brings you the most relevant handpicked stories from the world of health IT, curated by experts, summarized for clarity, and delivered directly to you. No more sifting through irrelevant news, just pure focused content to keep you informed and ahead. Don't be left behind. Start your day with insight at the intersection of technology and healthcare. This Week Health, where information inspires innovation.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have talked about AI this week, but I would venture a guess that the most talked about thing this week isn't AI, but the stuff that's happening back home, systems being down because of a cybersecurity incident. You just were quoted in an article. Just tell me that story, because it's gotten a lot of coverage. A lot of people are reading that.
Okay. So the story kind of starts quite some time ago, but the newness of the story starts on like February 13th when some security researchers reported a feature in ConnectWise that allowed you to create an admin account even though you weren't logged into the system, which bypasses multi-factor authentication instantly. Okay. So that security researcher told them in private, they spent the next 2 days coming up with a patch like they should. Then they rolled that patch out from the 15th to the 19th to their network, because for all their cloud-based servers, but they also knew they had about 8,000 plus on-prem instances of it.
Right.
And so on the 19th, they said, like a good company would do, there's nothing wrong with what they did. Everybody's going to have flaws that they need to fix. They said, we have an issue, and here's the solution. Well, you know what? Malicious actors have been watching ConnectWise and other vendors of these similar products because they're a big gateway.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they pounced on that probably just as fast, if not faster, than anybody else to patch the situations. And so we started noticing a whole basket load of different kinds, from different kinds of malware to denial of service attacks to ransomware attacks being loaded as a payload through that open door now and stuff like that.
Right.
And so they noticed that. And so what they did at ConnectWise was they freed up the ability to put that patch on to everybody. Even if you were running an unlicensed version of their product, they let you put the patch on. And then they also, another step, and really gave you a screen that says, if you try to log into an unpatched system,
these are the things you should look for.
Call the help desk if you have an unpatched system.
Yeah.
So they really were diligent. But the trouble is, statistics show somebody's going to get hurt in that. And
it's a race, right?
I mean,
it's really a race. When somebody announces a zero day,
this is a 2 day.
People find it out, right?
It's a two day,
right?
Yeah.
But to the world, it sort of feels like a zero day. Once that's out there, then there's a race. There's a race between the good guys who are trying to figure out how to patch it and get it not a problem, turn it into not a problem anymore. The bad guys are trying to figure out how to weaponize it.
Yeah.
And patching is a chronic problem for us too.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. It's a big burden, but the malicious actors operate in minutes and hours.
Yeah.
And the good guys operate in days and weeks.
I mean, you get the patch and you have to put it in the lab and you need to test it,
make
sure it's not going to break workflow, business workflow or clinical workflow or whatever. And all of that takes time. Yeah. The bad guys are standing on the accelerator. So
if you move forward just a little bit, 2 days later, as we talked about, on the 21st at like 2 o'clock in the morning, an announcement comes out, Change Healthcare's got an issue.
Yeah.
And they again did the right thing. Disconnect. Step number one, disconnect.
Yeah.
And some people were faulting them for doing that because they were worried, well, what about the implications in healthcare? No, I'm exactly concerned about healthcare.
Yeah.
That is the perfect thing you need to do, disconnect.
I'm with you. That's an admirable first step.
Right, and then start communications to everybody to
be transparent.
To be transparent and, you know, work through, call in the right individuals to start fixing the problem, and then come up with some assurance and show me that I'm not coming back online unless I've got assurance that I've either gone to the right kind of a backup or I've done a rip and replace or I've even gotten hardware, whatever it is. And these things, everybody wants them to be back online as quickly as possible.
Right.
But traditionally, history would tell you these kind of things can last upwards of a month.
They take a while to sort out and understand what's really happening.
It might be a couple days, but it takes a while to sort out and get assurance that I'm putting back on something that's not still affected. Not to mention the fact that's just business continuity. When you go to disaster recovery on this, it could be 6 months to a year before they're really up and operational on that. But today, if I were talking to people about what they should be doing, it's like, don't get into the blame game. It doesn't matter that Alpha V was the actor.
Yeah.
How does that help you that a Russian nation state was doing this?
Yeah.
That's you as a security professional or as a CIO should be looking to your business unit leader to say, like, what's our business continuity plan? This was, in essence, not a third-party breach, but a fourth-party breach.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you have a business continuity plan in place for in case something fails?
Yeah.
And the answer is typically, well, we didn't think about that yet.
We haven't looked at those forms for a few years.
We're doing our surveys and we're getting our third parties to turn in their self-assessments.
Right.
Maybe a couple of us are auditing those. But when we get back an answer that says, I'm not comfortable with the answer, we haven't taken the next maturity step to say, well, what's my contingency plan around that? And that's what I would tell people today. And it's like, if I'm focused today, I'm telling our security and CIOs, and like, please start the conversations. We're in business continuity. You need to be looking at, how do I keep the lights on? Not who done it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's like, number one, where are my cash reserves?
Right.
Because this is a cash flow issue.
Claims.
I'm not filing claims. Yeah. You know, my insurance is down. What are my cash reserves? How healthy are my, you know, lines of credit?
Mm.
What are my favorite vendors that are willing to negotiate some new longer terms with me?
Yeah.
And then what's the number for my favorite financial friend at CMS?
Yeah. Here's another question I have for you along that same lines. Cyber insurance. So I have business interruption insurance. Does that kick in because it's not my breach, but it's one of my third party operators that had a problem that's causing me a business interruption? Have you had any conversations with anybody about that? Have you heard anybody trying to make those claims?
Yes, and the conversations have all led to, it depends.
How was the policy written?
How was the policy written?
What were the things that were colored out?
And right.
You couldn't,
exactly. And so there were some telling questions that came up in a meeting, the call where, you know, HHS was on the phone with CISA and the FBI and others, where one provider says, is the reason that Optum said this is a nation state attack so that they could get insurance coverage? And the answer is, I don't know. But you're right. Those are very important questions about, you know, funding this. But even if it's cyber insurance, it's like, they're going to give me my money, but are they going to cut me a check tonight?
Right. Yeah. How long is this claim
process?
This is right now.
Because
I only have 10 days cash on hand.
Yeah, it's what is my cash on hand and what's my flow there?
Yeah,
and it's not just about the money, but the money is important for all the other resources we need too. Because, and that's why I said that we're a risk assurance firm that's looking at helping to preserve all of the resources in healthcare as a cybersecurity firm, because it's going to take extra resources right now today, because we're manually processing prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
We're writing them down on pencil and paper. Mm-hmm. We're storing them in a file somewhere. So that's extra resources.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slower to the patient solution. And then later on, when we get from continuity into business recovery, I've got extra personnel that I have to bring in or distract from patient care to back.
Yeah, yeah, back
file
all that,
all that into the system so that it can keep going. So it's really
what
about
that's going to be.
Yeah, and resource management is really what it's what we're trying to protect. So because those resources are absolutely mission critical, because everybody runs on a thin edge of excess resources because they want to devote it all to patient care.
Right.
And so we're really keen on that. So really, the message today is watch that.
Yeah. Here's
another, worry about the rest in a bar 6 months from now.
Right.
Who done it?
Out
later.
And that attribution part is actually, we sort of chatted about that briefly before we started. We started having a conversation before we started recording. And at some point I was like, we can't talk about this unless we have the camera running. But the attribution part is really difficult too, right? Because a lot of these are sort of ransomware as a service kind of companies.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So the ransomware, the capability is distributed. There are situations where the spider organizations, the e-crime syndicates inside the company get mad at each other and the company breaks up, and the IP, I guess, from a cyber or bad guy perspective, goes in different directions. And so sometimes now it's hard to do attribution because it all looks the same until you really dig into the sort of like the tactics.
Yeah, it's going to take weeks of detailed forensic studies to actually discover this, because the initial attack vectors generally all look the same, because even the principles involved in them can be the same. So like, for example, the signatures of what's going on now look very much like the same signatures that happened in the Colonial Pipeline attack.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Carter started to put some thoughts around that, how similar that is in that field to our field here.
Yeah.
Pretty certain that some of the same individuals or their work product was involved in this going forward. And they get kind of stomped on by the authorities, the tapes disperse and scatter, but they don't all go away. They reconvene, pick up the pieces of their software, put a few new tools on them, and away they go.
Wow, amazing. One of the things I wanted to ask if you're getting called about is, and we sort of touched on it earlier, as the folks in the pharmacy, for example, start to talk to their counterparts and the pharmacy had changed, like, I think we're okay. I think it's okay for you guys to reconnect. And then they come to the CISO or the CIO and they say, sounds like it's all clear on our side. So they start putting pressure on, pretty much right away.
Turn it back on, right.
So talk about the risk conversation around making the decision about what you need to reconnect.
Okay. I'll start that conversation off with the fact that I think that, by their actions and by our previous interactions with Optum, that they have sound principles and practices in the cybersecurity field.
Mm.
People need to recognize that Change Health is a relatively recent acquisition on their part. It only happened in last October. So you can't say that Change Healthcare is Optum's healthcare. It is today.
Yeah.
Okay. So first step is that what is your trust level relationship with the provider of the service? And in this case, I don't know who Change was, but I do know who Optum is.
Yeah.
And so that's step number one. I'm going to check.
Yeah.
I'm going to
check that. Three guys in a garage.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to check that box. Okay. I'm going to look at, you've got to then do an immediate business impact analysis with all the right stakeholders in the room to determine this particular connection, this particular operation. Is it mission critical? Are there other sources that we have? Do we have options, not options? If it goes down, if it turns out that we turn it on and it is a risk, I hope I'm smart enough to now have a backup and I've got monitoring on place. So those are the kinds of questions that would go through my mind in a meeting. And then the business unit leader would then make the decision, because it's a business decision. It's not a cybersecurity decision.
Right.
We're in the cyber world, we're the advisors to that situation. They're in charge of the bottom line. So they've got to make the decision with our advice. And so it's both IT security and business needs.
Yeah. No, I love that. Paul, let me ask you sort of one more question. And that's really in the more broader sense of, we spent a lot of time talking about Change. We spent a lot of time talking about Change this week. Other things that you're working on that you're kind of super proud of that First Health is...
Well, one of the things I'll tell you is that we are very strong proponents of this conference here, Vibe, okay? Because in the cybersecurity space, there's a saying that you probably know, that whatever it is you know today, 18 months from now, half of it is obsolete, okay? So that if you're not reinventing yourself every day, you're doing a disservice to whatever applications you're serving. So we're here at this conference and super pumped and excited, because this is where the digital innovations in healthcare are happening, and we're listening and researching on those, and we're also looking at the new techniques in cybersecurity practice, and our job is to marry those two together to make sure that the future stays as protected as it can.
To make those lanes merge as early as you
possibly
can,
right? Yeah. To merge early and talk to the startups,
early age,
and make sure that they're working on building cybersecurity in from the start. We know that's the most efficient way to do cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Little bits and bites each piece of the way. You don't want it to be at the end of the day and be in the position where DoD was until Cerner. No, you gotta stop.
Yeah.
And now I've used a year. And these people are, you know, they're working on venture capital money. That's time to market. A year would crush
them. They gotta go. Yeah.
A year would crush them. So we want them in there first. So that's really the big excitement for us at this conference. And, you know, AI, as you open with, is really important on people's list. And it's important to us too, in the idea that we are strong proponents of the fact that AI has the ability to improve healthcare delivery outcomes. Our job is to make sure that it doesn't at the same time give away the keys to the kingdom as it's offering that improved additional service.
Right. We see more and more AI built into the products that we use, but we've not spent a lot of time thinking about what are the terms and conditions of when we put that thing into that software as a service product, and then it goes into the AI machine. Do they get to keep that data and use that data to train? You know, like there's a lot of questions. I feel like that is a whole can of worms that we only barely open.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like the devil is in the detail of the unintended consequences of the steps that we're taking.
Like
and they're not just data driven, they're ethics driven too.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're looking at anticipatory ethics processes, like, because everything that we build is built by a person, okay? Software has the personality of the coder and stuff like that, and it has an intention.
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to interview people for the intention of what they're doing, and then look at the unintended features of the product
and the biases of the person.
And the biases,
that they don't even realize that they have, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Interesting. Thanks. I really appreciate you coming by. Really, it's always, I mean, it's great fun to spend some time with you and talk to you. I have a feeling we're going to be spending a lot more time together.
Looking forward to that.
Thanks for being a part of this. And that's it. We really appreciate you being here. More soon.
Thanks for listening to this Interview in Action episode. If you found value in this, share it with a peer. It's a great chance to discuss and, in some cases, start a mentoring relationship. One way you can support the show is to subscribe and leave us a rating. If you could do that, would be great. And we want to give a big thanks to our partners who make this possible: Quantum Health, Gordian, Dr. First, CDW, Gozio Health, Artisite, and Zscaler. You can learn more about them by visiting thisweekhealth.com/partners. Thanks for listening. That's all for now.